Costs to originate keep rising, even with more technology in the industry. The problem is the core platform. A new LOS can re-architect the process around data, not humans moving paper files. Vesta has built this LOS, and you can learn more at vesta.com. Welcome, everyone. My guest today is lead analyst Logan Modashami to talk about home prices, mortgage rates, and the effect of war on the 10-year yield. First, I want to thank our podcast sponsor, Vesta, for making this episode possible. Logan, welcome back to the podcast.
It is wonderful to be here, Sarah.
We have such a big day. We have so much going on right now. So let's start with everything that happened overnight when we had Israel escalate by attacking Iran, or counterattacking, however you want to say it. That did a lot of things to the 10-year yield. So let's start there.
Okay. So we wrote this as part of the Tracker article last week. So this is Friday morning right now. And one of the things we try to highlight is that a lot of war headlines can drive money into what they call the safety trade and goes into the 10-year yield. Now, we've had two Fridays, well, technically this was a Thursday night, where the headlines of either Iran shooting drones or missiles, or Israel had, you know, or even the perception that this was going to happen, put money into the 10-year yield, mortgage rates went lower. But last night was another good example of, we saw missiles or drones or whatever being shot at Iran, and the 10-year yield went all the way down to 450 overnight or night trading. And then as the night progressed and as the day came, when there was de-escalation, right, the safety trade is taken off. So we have to be mindful that there's a difference between a safety trade and then, let's say, all-out war, right? And, you know, when Russia invaded Ukraine, you saw energy prices spike, but wheat prices, I always like to do wheat charts, and you saw wheat prices escalate, and it didn't go right down overnight. You know, it was hovering at a very high level. See, that is what we call war inflationary problems. Right. So when we did that podcast about what could possibly get to 1970s inflation is war, some kind of supply where commodity prices go up and they stay elevated. So we don't have that here. This is just basically a headline flight to safety. OK, de-escalation, 10-year yield goes back up. And we're kind of where we somewhat started from before the headlines came through.
So as you said, this is Friday morning that we're recording this. It's going to be live on Monday morning when people might be listening. So all sorts of things could happen.
What could happen? Yeah, who knows what could happen over the weekend? And so at least now we have two examples that people can take a look at and see that, okay, difference between like an invasion, prolonged war versus kind of headline takes on either the bond market or oil prices, something to that nature. And we're kind of back to normal.
You know, we started doing the Tracker. You started writing the Tracker on Saturdays when we had the bank failures last year, because so much would happen over the weekend that we didn't want to write it on Friday or Monday. Like, we had to start doing something on the weekend. And so we've kept that up ever since, but this is going to be another interesting weekend, I think, of news and what that does to things.
Yeah. You know, I mean, 2023, the banking crisis created, and it was a banking crisis. Whenever you have to have emergency facilities created, your job is to try to mitigate the damage. Here, you know, war is different, you know, and so far from what I'm seeing is that de-escalation is kind of thing, but who knows, you know, tomorrow morning at this time, you know, something could change. And by the time Monday morning comes, all this is kind of moot. So, but you now see examples of what could go on. Now, last year, I would say, when the 10-year yield started to fall, the 2-year yield, remember the 2-year yield, milk and cookies, right? The 2-year yield is a pricing mechanism. The 2-year yield has basically twice now since 2020 forecasted some really big macroeconomic events, pricing in rate cuts in 2023. And again, I implore all of you, if you really want to kind of see this, go to my Instagram stories. I try to show examples so people can understand. The 2-year yield so far has been wrong on the weakness of the economy. both times, right? Earlier this year, they were pricing in way too many rate cuts. And here we are again, the two-year yield is kind of back elevated from those lows. So there's a difference between an economic headline that is more domestic related or kind of the war headline. You can see the war headlines kind of fix them up very quickly. And that's what we saw. So two different years with two different kind of events that have both driven the 10-year yield and the two-year yield lower together to both times have been reversed more a little bit egregious last year because a lot of people thought we were going into a recession in 2023 or the Fed would have to pivot at that point.
So lots to talk about on mortgage rates. We can do that. I also want to get to home prices. So what topic do you want to talk about next?
Yeah, I think the existing home sale price is, again, if you don't follow housing religiously and you see this headline that existing home prices are up year over year, and you know, I went on Yahoo yesterday and they were kind of like, you know, what? So what about pricing? And again, for me, it's my job is to teach. I feel like the best thing I can do for America is to kind of teach economics because, one of the tactics I've tried to do this year, Sarah, is that I try to explain people, a lot of the housing crash people are frauds and cowards. So I would never block anyone on social media because I love the debate. But then I said, listen, I could prove to everyone there are. They will not forecast with their names and faces. So I gave them December, January, February, March, and April. And I said, if anybody's going to talk about home price crashes and you do not give me your name and face and forecast for your children, your wife, your coworkers, everybody gets to read your macroeconomic models, which I know none of you have, right? Then you're gone, right? Because I don't mind taking Russian and Chinese trolling, you know, anti-American trash out the door, but domestic stuff, that's what we really want to take out. So nobody could really do it. I'm shocked. I was like, I'm going to hide behind a stupid name. But here, if I teach you guys how to look at the supply and demand equilibrium, then it starts to make sense. And what I told Yahoo yesterday is the same thing I've explained here since 2022. The entire housing dynamics shifted after November 9th, 2022.
And why? And it's let's talk about why, because people have been like, you know, different people message you and me and they're like, what is it about November 9th, 2022?
Home prices stopped crashing. That's the thing. On November 9th, when we wrote that article, it said, okay, so the forward-looking indicators are going to take us down to this 4 million level. It's just really rare to have home sales crash below this, especially now when we have over 158 million people working and, you know, the best housing demographics. We don't have what we call, like, here's a good example of if I was on stage right now, I'd say, listen, in 2008, you know, the banking crisis there shut credit down. I remember, right? You know, like banks couldn't lend because the credit markets were breaking. We don't have that problem here. No. In 2011, somebody said, I want to sell my house and buy another one. Okay, you run the numbers. Oh, you're underwater. You need to bring additional cash. That's a lockdown. Selling equity is actually a real lockdown. They couldn't do it. So they had to wait for home prices to rise to go up. Here, we don't have any of those things. We have awesome credit profiles. We have over 158 million people working. We have really good demographics. We just have mortgage rates not preventing sales from growing in a meaningful way. But with all that said, the 4 million level held again, you know, and that was the whole thing during COVID. That was the whole thing last year. So unless we get home sales crashing from 4 million to 2 million, right, the supply and demand equilibrium has changed, right? So we've gone from the biggest home sale crash ever recorded in the history of America, just an absolute crash. And by the way, Neil Kashkari runs around there. I'm surprised that housing is resilient. What a troll. He's just trolling people, okay? Neil's a smart guy. He knows what he's doing. He's just trolling, right? 6% mortgage rates is a problem. People are buying homes and having sex again. We can't have that happen, no. What happened is sales collapsed because if you take the equilibrium of all the buyers in America, move-up buyers, move-down buyers, cash buyers, investors, first-time home buyers, you put them all together, it's just really rare to get below that. So for me, it was like, okay, this is the ultimate test. We had home prices accelerate out of control. We had mortgage rates escalate out of control. Does this level hold again? It did. And until that variable changes, and it's even more egregious now that home sales crashes fast because we have a lot more people now. Like in 2008, when we got to like 3.7, 3 million or something like that around there, we had a lot less people working and we had a credit market crash. Here, it's just that we have a lot of people looking to buy, just mortgage rates up, but it's still held. So take that into consideration. The supply and demand equilibrium is not working from home sales crashing anymore. And that gave you the authentic price declines that we saw in the second half of 2022. Now, the inexperience I saw out there is that everybody thought prices follow volume, and they just, nobody knew about that 4 million level. Why? Because they don't track housing. It's like, even today, people don't even know about that. So here, sales just bounced and we're just going back down again in sales and we're just hovering back and forth. So the speed or the velocity of prices crashing is not here. So it's shocking to people say, how the hell did home prices are up year over year? You know, with very low levels of sales and mortgage rates this elevated, because these buyers down here, the 4 million home buyers that are sold, they don't have the affordability crisis as the marginal home buyer. From 6.5 down to 4 million. Those people, so the product that was there, especially in the second half of 20, they needed price cuts to sell those homes. They were already in the marketplace. That's why when you have a shock event, you have to be a little bit mindful that when that ends, we go back to a normal marketplace in terms of supply and demand equilibrium. And if rates go up and demand gets weaker and the slope of the inventory curve goes up, there you go. But still today, monthly supply is 3.2 months, right? It was like 10.4 months in 2008. You know, it's just, we're selling homes a lot faster and there's not as much stress. So there's no need for price cuts yet in a meaningful fashion. So I think that's why I always highlight November 9th. November 9th to me is even more critical than the COVID-19 recovery model, April 7th, just because we were at such a low bar in economic activity. It doesn't take much to just shoot right back up. Here was like, oh my God, home sales are crashing. Can it hold? And we waited, right? We every week we said, forward-looking demand's getting better. Forward-looking demand's getting better. Better, better, better. And everyone's like, no, all my prices. And look what happened. So now everybody has that. That's the teaching experience, right? So this is why the tracker's created. And if the inventory slope picks up and price cut percentages pick up, home prices, price growth will get weak, and then you could see declines, but we're not in this magnificent, you know, 20, 30% home price crash kind of cycle because the situation is much different. 2007 NAR data, because we're talking about the National Association of Realtors, 2007 active inventory was 4 million. We are at 1.1 million today. Okay, monthly supply, 10.4 months in 2008, we're 3.2 months. Distressed sellers were coming into the marketplace. This is why I think this is an unfair advantage I have over everyone in America. I know what the data look like. You don't. Most of you guys just copy and paste other people's stuff. You actually don't have the data. I knew what it looked like back then. New listings data was running at 250 to 400,000 per week for 4 years. We had massive credit stress build up for 4 years. And you think that data line is, oh, it's 2008 again. And what do we tell people, Sarah? What do we want people to do?
We want them to read.
And why is reading is a good thing? It's because the history of human civilization has always taught us this. Those that have the ability to read have an unfair advantage over those that don't. So our job is just to give the data out so everyone can see. Now, hopefully, now that we are in April 2024, right? The COVID-19 crash, the forbearance crash, the biggest crash in home sales and mortgage rates, the lowest demand. What is going to the supply and demand equilibrium? That's what matters. And we're here. We're here for you every single week. We will never leave you astray, but we will give you the real data so you could learn and then you could ignore all those people. You can ignore the fanatics.
And even more, you can plan your business, you can make decisions, you can know what's really coming. So one of the things here is that on home prices, of course, it's very particular to different markets. We know that some markets are seeing home price growth really slow down. Some are not. Some are back in that environment where they're getting multiple offers. And so you see less price cuts, you see more competition. So of course it's very local, but what you're talking about is like, where should we be looking going out and what's the forecast for home prices over the next 6 months?
what I always do is I do one price forecast at the start of the year, and I try to encapsulate every possible variable I can. And I never revise that because we have the tracker data each week. So the total combined forecast for 2024 was 2.3% nominal home price growth. That means real home prices are negative, right? The equivalence of rent, right? So the pricing mechanism, the pricing for this year was going to be softer because I'm not a Fed pivot person. However, if the weekly data got what was occurring early on in the year is that when rates were going down, demand was picking up, I was going to be wrong, right? Price growth was going to be stronger. Now, if inventory starts to grow faster, like remember, I'm still waiting for my 1 week for my inventory growth model to work, okay? And if the price cut percentage start, then you start to get pricing weakness. But what it is, it's just this very supply and demand equilibrium fight. There's no major home price crash happening. There's nothing like that. And we have been doing this for 13 years and we have it all recorded. We have all the receipts in the world, but I don't care about the final answer. I want you all to understand how does this actually work, right? So then everybody, when they read the tracker, they're like, oh, okay, all right, that makes sense. Okay, the price cut percentage, that makes sense. Then we talk about the equilibrium of rates, what drives the 10-year yield, purchase application data, the forward-looking, and then you put them all together and there it is. It's this beautiful, gorgeous-looking model, right? And it basically has timelined every single cycle that we've had since the Peloponnesian War, but it's live data, so you don't have to wait for the existing home sales market. Like the interesting thing is Zillow came out for the month of March. It was like the third hottest home price growth March in 24 years, some crazy thing like that. And people are like, what the hell is going on? Well, back then rates were falling down. It's a very low inventory curve. So it was a very hot month-to-month print. But now we're already ahead of that. And we're starting to see inventory pick up and we're starting to see the price cut. It's nothing like 2022 yet. But if it changed for the better and the worse, we got you. We got this, right? And we take it. And again, I encourage everyone, be careful of people that use percentage increases, right? And this is why I like to show those nominal numbers and those big wide, and, you know, when you start to see major stress in housing, new listings data takes off, the slope of the inventory curve starts to go up, the price cut percentage curve starts to really slope up higher. That was 2022, right? And 2022 was the craziest year in housing ever, considering what we started off with in February to the middle of the year to the toward the year. And then all of a sudden in November, we're like, oh my God, this is stopping. We had basically 3 years of housing encapsulated into 1 year. That's insane, right? And that's what 2022 was. It was the biggest abnormality in housing data we'll ever see in our life, because we started off with running at 20% home price growth. We ended up, and it ended up being at 5.6%. But in that case, you get to see how this works on a week-to-week basis, so you don't have to wait for the existing home sales report to come in and go, how the hell is prices up year over year? Yes, it's record low demand. It's the third year of record low demand in housing. But the inventory levels are different and there's no stressed sellers yet. Florida can be a case, you know, where we see inventory growth, especially in areas that you have to, you know, contemplate this. Home prices are up high, rates are up high, insurance costs are up high. The cost of housing there is more for a buyer than it is in other parts of the US. That is an area I would say focus on that too, because does the buyer really want to pay X amount for that kind of risk in a hurricane area with insurance costs? Because you do not know how much insurance will go up on you for the next 2, 3, 4, 10 years, right? So you have to put climate risk variables into the equation, into areas that you see the insurance costs accelerating, and you just don't know what the future is gonna bring with that.
I think that's a really great point, because one of the things you always talk about is the fact that the 30-year fixed mortgage is a hedge against inflation, because you know what you're going to be paying from here until the end of that note. And hopefully your wages rise, things change, but that stays the same. But if insurance keeps going up, especially in the way that it has in different areas over the last 2 years, and or what if you can't even get insurance? Because, you know, sometimes your insurer just decides we're done, we're packing up and leaving. That's a huge variable.
Yeah. You know, in California, they have that law where they'll find you insurance majority of the time. In Florida, you have a lot of people paying cash to kind of get away from the insurance clause. So it's one of these things where you there, again, the real estate market generally flows together, but again, there's pockets where there is a strength and weaknesses. Like, you know, Boise, Idaho was supposed to be ground zero of the 40-50% home price crash thing. And then it, the inventory kind of tightened up over there after that big increase. So again, there's sub-markets, but in general terms, if people were trying to forecast big national home price crashes, there are models for this. There are things that need to happen. And this is why we try to highlight the new listings data and then the credit data and the stress data, because it was very evident what happened in 2008. We had 4 years of a credit stress buildup. Then the job loss recession happened. And then the new listings data exploded for 4 years, because here comes the credit stress and here comes the distress sales and everything. If you take that out of the equation, what do you have? You have 2020, 2021, 2022, 2024, right? And then you take off, the forbearance was never going to be a thing. That was already done with. You're dealing with homeowners that are in a very good spot. But once the data breaks, once stress breaks, we'll see it in the new listings data. We will never be able to miss it, right? Because it'll spike up and it'll stay there for a long period of time, like it was from 2008 to 2012. We're just not there yet. So I would tell people, focus on Florida, right? Because those are variables that are not traditional, right? We don't have climate risk change in terms of insurance costs accelerating. So keep an eye on there. Keep an eye on all the weekly inventory data, the new listings data, and we'll just take it 1 week. Now, I know that's not the sexiest, funnest, it's doom porn, whatever people like to do. It's not, but it's actually real work. But then everybody gets to be on the same page, right? So you don't have to go like, oh my God, why are existing home prices up year over year, right? Be the detective, not the troll.
Oh, you brought out one of the catchphrases. We have not heard that in what, like 6 months or more? Be the detective, not the troll. Thanks for making my bingo scorecard there. That has been left off for too long.
No, and hopefully it's April 2024. Remember, my job is to teach. I do not care about the final answer as much as the why, right? And if everybody learns the why factor, then you think about it. The beauty of having the United States of America, all of its citizens, working with one set of data lines that are really ignoring the fanatics of the world, right? The extreme left and the extreme right. Take them out of the equation. We have this unbelievable, magnanimous country. It's so great. The United States, we've destroyed all American bears since 1790. And when I die, there will be another person who takes my place. And this war will always go on. But as long as we teach people economics, it just makes the other groups look very silly. Because let's be honest here. After the 2008 financial crisis, it became very vogue to be doom porn, right? Zero hedge or the zero brain dead and all that stuff. So for 14 years, people have been talking about the great collapse of the dollar, the United States of America, home prices crashing, everything. It's one group of people. But in this case, if you didn't even have COVID, right, we would still be year 14 of the longest economic and job expansion ever recorded in history. And you probably would have a little bit more of a stable housing market, but whatever it is, America won and your crazy friends lost and your Uncle Dave looks terrible right now. And I just, nothing brings a bigger smile into my face than watching the American bears just cry every day about why haven't we collapsed? Why haven't, no.
Well, we are thankful that you are giving us your insight. Of course, look for the tracker, everyone, because we'll have the latest inventory numbers on there. Super important.
And I'm hoping to hit my first, you know, make contact, right? My model was always based on if mortgage rates get above 7.25%, which we are, the inventory growth, I'm making adjustments to the level of inventory now. We're not like back at the very low levels. We should have at least a few weeks between 11 to 17,000 active inventory growth, right? I didn't count last week because that was a snapback from Easter, but we should be able to get there. If that doesn't happen this year for me, then I've got to revamp everything, right? I've got to figure out why, you know, and I kind of have somewhat of a clue why maybe, but I need the entire year to look at this. Inventory growth to me has been slower than I anticipated with rates this high. But now that we're above 7.25, I get to really test the model now. New listings data positive. It's up year over year. I'm not a mortgage rate lockdown person, obviously, but it's just a tad slower than I would have liked to see. So in that's why, you know, we're not seeing home prices crash or anything. And just be careful of, I know this is a very common used term, prices follow volume. If that was the case, then 2023 would have the biggest home price crash ever, right? Prices follow, the growth rate of pricing will follow volume, right? But it doesn't necessarily mean that in 2023, and don't think I forgot everyone at the end of 2022 who forecasted major, major price declines in 2023, it reversed. Why? Because of November 9th. And once you understand what November 9th is, credit channels run inventory channels. What? Supply and demand equilibrium. Most sellers are buyers, right? So there's that missing gap that actually you'll sell a house and not buy. And then there's a first-time home buyer. That person does not give you a house. So whatever you want to count as 20 or 30% of the sellers do not buy another home, does the first-time home buyer take and suck that up in? If you think about it in that light, then it explains all the inventory data going back since 2010, really, right? This slow little downtrend, and it's been tested, right? 2013, 14, we had higher mortgage rates. 2018, 19, we had higher mortgage rates demand. 2020, we had COVID. We had forbearance. We had the biggest home sale crash. We've had everything you can throw at it, right? The next thing would be the job loss recession, whenever it happens in a normal fashion. But hopefully now, after 14 years, credit channels run inventory channels. American homeowners are doing good. They're not middle-aged men stock traders. Middle-aged men stock traders, I guarantee you, will sell their houses, move around 20 times, whatever, because they look at it as an asset, not as a payment, not with your child going to school, where your wife lives, or whatever. It's a different kind of product, right? So housing is the cost of shelter. That payment is the valuable thing, not the asset value, right? This is why all these people have so much equity, right? They have so much equity. People, why don't they sell and get out? Where are they going to live? They could live on the streets. Yeah, that makes sense. Get off of drugs. Read a book. All right, come on.
Come on, absolutely. Logan, thank you so much. We will see you in a couple of days at the gathering. You're giving our keynote speech there. We are doing a unplugged version of this podcast with you, Mike Simonson, Odetta Cushy. Cannot wait. It's going to be really fun.
Yes, the nerds are going to get together. And when the nerds get together, you know, nerds should always disagree on things. And that's the fun part for me, you know, because the last conference we had where the mortgage rate lockdown was actually discussed, I thought that was a very useful. And everyone could go back and look it up and see, you know, Sarah and I going at it. And just remember, be the detective, not the troll. Connect the dots here.
Everyone should go back and watch that and then let me know. Do you really think Logan won that? It just depends on how you define it. So I still have not.
It's very true. If you are part of the rates go lower, demand picks up, you get more sellers that come buyers. Yes, that happens all the time. That's the baseline of all my work. But it was never presented that mortgage rate lockdown was an inventory discussion. We can't get inventory growing with rates high. And that's just not been the case. Since the Peloponnesian War.
See, you want to relitigate this. Okay, well, people have to tune in. Thank you so much, Logan. See you soon. Thanks for listening to Housing Wire Daily. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to take a minute to rate the show and leave a comment. And make sure to tune in tomorrow for more news and insight.